Artemis Fowl, the 13-year-old criminal mastermind, captured the world's imagination when Owen Colfer's series debuted in 2001. Often described as Die Hard with Fairies, this second installment in the series became a New York Times bestseller and cemented Colfer's reputation for blending fantasy, technology, and humor in a way that appeals to both young readers and adults. The Arctic Incident takes readers deeper into Artemis's complex character, revealing that beneath his calculating exterior lies a boy desperately searching for his father. J.K. Rowling herself praised the series for its wry humor and unforgettable characters, while the books have sold over 25 million copies worldwide. What makes this particular installment fascinating is how it transforms Artemis from antagonist to reluctant hero, forcing him to collaborate with the very fairy folk he once exploited. Artemis Fowl II stands apart as an extraordinary teenager whose brilliance borders on the supernatural. By 13, he had not only defeated international chess grandmasters and secured multiple technology patents, but had also orchestrated sophisticated criminal enterprises ranging from digital bank heists to masterful art forgeries that fooled the world's leading experts. Yet beneath this criminal prodigy's calculating exterior, behind those cold, analytical eyes, lives a wounded child haunted by his father's mysterious disappearance. The tragedy struck 2 years earlier when Artemis Fowl Sr. vanished during a legitimate business venture gone wrong. His ship, the Fowl Star, was attacked and sunk by the Russian mafia in the treacherous waters of the Bay of Kola. The vessel's wreckage was found, but no bodies were recovered, a detail that young Artemis clung to with desperate hope. Thrust suddenly into the role of family patriarch, he watched the once mighty Fowl Empire crumble while his mother retreated into a deep depression, leaving him to shoulder responsibilities far beyond his years. In response, Artemis embarked on increasingly ambitious criminal schemes, each more daring than the last. He successfully amassed £15 million through various illicit ventures, money primarily earmarked for funding extensive search operations across Russia. His weekly sessions with school psychologist Dr. Poe reveal the depth of his obsession. During these meetings, Artemis maintains an impenetrable facade, defending his father's reputation with cutting wit while systematically dismantling every therapeutic technique the doctor employs. He particularly enjoys pointing out the flaws in Jungian psychology, much to Dr. Poe's frustration. The pivotal moment arrives when Butler, Artemis's towering bodyguard and closest confidant, interrupts a therapy session with urgent news about the Fowl Star investigation. At Fowl Manor, they review a grainy video file showing a man bound to a chair against a stark, snow-covered landscape. A crude sign in Cyrillic script reads, "Zdravstvuyte, syn," hello, son. Despite the poor video quality and the subject's emaciated condition, Artemis recognizes subtle mannerisms that convince him it's his father. This confirmation validates 2 years of unwavering belief and meticulous searching. The discovery catalyzes immediate action. Artemis initiates a complex rescue operation, directing Butler to contact their Swiss banker about converting fairy gold into untraceable funds. They'll travel under their carefully crafted chess championship aliases, Stefan Bashkir and Uncle Constantine, first taking their private Learjet to Scandinavia before switching to maritime transport to avoid detection. The mission carries extreme risks, including possible confrontation with the Russian mafia, Arctic conditions, and potential betrayals, but Artemis dismisses all concerns. For him, no price is too high, no danger too great when it comes to bringing his father home. This duality makes Artemis an intensely fascinating character, a teenage mastermind capable of orchestrating elaborate heists and manipulating supernatural beings, yet ultimately driven by the most fundamental human emotion, a child's love for their parent. his genius-level intellect and criminal expertise serve a deeply personal mission, transforming what might have been a straightforward adventure narrative into an emotionally resonant story about family, loyalty, and the lengths one will go to heal a broken home. While Artemis plots his father's rescue, serious trouble brews in the fairy world beneath Earth's surface. Captain Holly Short, the Leprechaun Squad's groundbreaking first female officer, has been demoted to mundane stakeout duty following the controversial Artemis Fowl affair. The demotion stings particularly because she had proven herself during that crisis, yet politics and traditional prejudices continue to hamper her career advancement. Paired with Chix Verbel, a flirtatious sprite known more for his swagger than his competence, she monitors an abandoned pressure elevator chute in Paris when their thermal imaging detects something unprecedented: mysterious gray figures. A reading that should be impossible since gray indicates no heat signature whatsoever. The seemingly routine investigation quickly spirals into danger when Chix is shot through the wing with surgical precision. The attack bears none of the hallmarks of typical underground criminal activity. It's too well planned, too sophisticated. Ignoring Commander Root's direct order to wait for backup, Holly pursues the attackers into an abandoned terminal building. There, she discovers two goblins equipped with military-grade reflective foil suits specifically designed to fool thermal sensors, showing an intelligence and technological sophistication far beyond typical goblin capacity. When backup finally arrives, they make an even more alarming discovery. The goblin was carrying a soft-nosed laser, an outlawed weapon that's been modified to run on human AA batteries, a technological adaptation that should be impossible for goblins to conceive or execute. This revelation sends shockwaves through the fairy command structure. Someone is not only trading with humans, a serious violation of fairy law, but is supplying the notoriously unstable Bois Kell Goblin Triad with contraband weapons. Commander Root and Foley, the cynical technical genius whose paranoid security measures protect Haven City, suspect Artemis Fowl might be orchestrating this smuggling operation given his previous exploitation of fairy technology. This suspicion leads Root to authorize Holly to bring both Artemis and Butler underground for questioning, a decision that could have far-reaching consequences for both worlds. Meanwhile, in a hidden laboratory deep beneath Haven City, the true architects of the conspiracy reveal themselves. Opal Cowboy, a brilliant but megalomaniacal pixie inventor whose technological innovations have revolutionized fairy society, has formed an alliance with Briar Cudgeon, a once-respected LEP officer whose career and face were permanently scarred during the siege at Fowl Manor. Together, they're methodically arming the Bois Kell for a full-scale revolution, with Opal providing gold and secure facilities while manipulating a human trader named Luke Carrere to supply the crucial battery components. The fairy world of Haven City emerges as a technological marvel hidden beneath the Earth's surface, a complex society where centaurs develop quantum computers and secret laboratories while goblins plot in the neon-lit shadows of the lower levels. This underground metropolis has its own intricate political system, deep-seated prejudices, and power struggles that mirror and sometimes exceed those of the human world above. The ongoing tension between tradition and progress, exemplified by Holly's challenging position as the first female leprechaun officer and the resistance she continues to face, adds compelling depth to this richly imagined fantasy realm. The city itself becomes a character, with its gleaming spires of ancient architecture seamlessly blending with advanced technology, all hidden beneath miles of rock and soil. In a stunning turn of events, Holly captures Artemis and Butler, bringing them to Police Plaza for interrogation. Commander Root demands answers about their suspected goblin trading, but a Rotimager scan proves Artemis hasn't seen goblins or participated in any illegal trade. Rather than releasing the humans, Root proposes an unexpected alliance. He needs Artemis's help tracking down the human connection to the Bois Kell's weapons. Artemis agrees to help on one condition: ferry transport to Russia to rescue his father. They strike a deal, with Holly assigned as their shuttle pilot to Paris. This reluctant partnership forms the emotional core of the story, former enemies forced to trust each other despite their complicated history. In Paris, Butler tracks down Luc Carrère, the human supplying batteries to the Boiskels. He discovers Carrère has been mesmerized and is armed with a fairy weapon called a bouncer, a wide-bore laser designed to ricochet until it hits something. Using Foley's safety net prototype, Butler contains the blast and escapes with the fairy weapon, confirming that while Carrère sold batteries to someone, he never directly dealt with goblins. Back at Police Plaza, the group realizes they're facing a traitor within fairy ranks. When Foley sends an urgent message revealing that Haven has been overrun by goblins with Cudgeon and Opal Cowboy behind the plot, they must formulate a plan to save both worlds. Root proposes breaking into Cowboy Laboratories to restore weapons control, but the facility's security seems impenetrable. Blast-resistant walls, DNA cannons, and bedrock foundations. Their only hope lies with Mulch Diggums, a kleptomaniac dwarf and the only criminal to ever break into Cowboy Labs and survive. After tracking him to Los Angeles, where he's been living under the alias Lance Digger and stealing Oscar statuettes, they convince the reluctant dwarf to join their mission with the promise of a 2-day head start afterward. This unlikely team, an elf commander, a fairy captain, a teenage criminal mastermind, his bodyguard, and a kleptomaniac dwarf, must now work together despite their differences. Their forced cooperation creates moments of both tension and unexpected camaraderie, highlighting how crisis can forge bonds between the most unlikely allies. With Haven City under siege by the Boiskel Goblin Triad, and LEP weapons rendered useless by Opal sabotage, the team's only hope lies in infiltrating Cowboy Laboratories. Mulch reveals a dangerous but possible entry point, a fissure that opens for only 3 minutes before a magma flare hits, leading to a hollow titanium foundation rod that he and his cousin had filled with sewage instead of solid titanium to cut costs. Holly pilots their shuttle through the closing tunnel with magma at their heels, barely escaping as the rock plates crash together behind them. The group then faces the disgusting task of wading through the recycling column filled with sewage until they reach a patch of flexibond Mulch had installed during his previous break-in. Inside Cowboy Labs, they split up. Root, Holly, and Butler head toward the computer center to confront the 200 goblins guarding the facility, while Artemis and Mulch take an alternative route. When Mulch suffers a digestive blockage, Artemis helps him release a tremendous burst of dwarf gas that incapacitates an approaching goblin lieutenant. Learning how Mulch previously escaped the labs, Artemis formulates a desperate plan involving the deactivated plasma pipes overhead. Despite warnings about residual charge and radiation, he dons an LEP helmet and enters the plasma conduit, enduring painful shocks as he pulls himself through the orange gel. After 63 excruciating pulls, he emerges into the inner sanctum where Cudgeon and the goblin generals are watching Butler battle their forces on screen. Artemis manages to contact Foley, who instructs him to broadcast their recorded conversation revealing Cudgeon's betrayal of the Boiskel. When the goblin generals hear Cudgeon's plan to eliminate them after the revolution, chaos erupts. Cudgeon activates DNA cannons to neutralize the goblins, but Butler smashes through the reinforced door to rescue Artemis. In the final confrontation, Artemis receives a phone call that he passes to Opal, revealing Cudgeon's plan to eliminate her after their victory. The enraged Pixie attacks Cudgeon with her hover chair, sending them both crashing into the active plasma conduit. Cudgeon is killed instantly by the radioactive tendrils, while Opal survives but is knocked unconscious by Holly. With Cudgeon's remote control short-circuited, Foley regains control of Police Plaza systems, activating subcutaneous sleepers in the goblins and reprogramming DNA cannons for non-lethal bursts, ending the rebellion in seconds. This elaborate infiltration showcases both Artemis's strategic brilliance and the team's ability to adapt to unexpected challenges, qualities that will prove essential for their next mission. With the fairy revolution quelled, Artemis can finally focus on his true mission, rescuing his father from the Russian mafia. Commander Root honors their deal, providing transport to the Arctic Circle between Murmansk and Severomorsk, where the exchange is set to take place on the Nikodime, a rusting nuclear submarine. Mikhail Vasikin and Kamar, the same mafia enforcers who captured Artemis Sr. 2 years ago, now hold him captive while awaiting ransom. With 100 armed men surrounding the area, Butler determines a direct assault is impossible. Instead, Artemis implements a desperate plan that seems unthinkable. He contacts the kidnappers by phone and demands they show his father's face. When they remove the hood, confirming it's truly Artemis Sr., Butler shoots the captive with a fairy rifle. The shocked Russians throw the bleeding man overboard, believing Artemis has killed his own father. Artemis then offers them a new deal. He'll leave the ransom money by a flare on a nearby hill, explaining he actually wanted his father dead to maintain control of his empire. The greedy Russians abandon their posts to retrieve the money, which is actually fairy counterfeit that will dissolve in 72 hours. Meanwhile, Holly flies toward the submarine to rescue Artemis Sr. from the freezing Arctic waters. Despite Fairy's intense hatred of cold, she plunges into the sub-zero radioactive water, locating the unconscious man and rocketing back through the rapidly freezing ice hole. Landing on the submarine's deck, Holly channels healing magic into Artemis's father while the Russians evacuate. Watching through LEP technology, Artemis initially fears the worst until Holly confirms success. One live mudman. He's not pretty, but he's breathing. Overcome with relief, Artemis sobs briefly before regaining his composure and focusing on their escape. This rescue operation represents the culmination of Artemis's 2-year quest to find his father. The elaborate deception, making the Russians believe he wanted his father dead, showcases his strategic brilliance, while his emotional reaction to his father's rescue reveals the vulnerable boy beneath the criminal mastermind facade. Throughout their adventure, Artemis undergoes significant moral growth, learning the value of cooperation and sacrifice. This transformation is particularly evident during their journey on a radioactive chemical train after being ambushed by goblins. When Commander Root and Butler are left dangling precariously from a pit in line, Artemis must climb to the train's roof, battle fierce winds, and use fairy acid to melt the skylight lock. After tumbling inside among radioactive barrels, he melts the door lock and pulls Holly inside just as the train rounds a bend. The impact knocks Holly unconscious, and when Artemis collapses on her, his contact with her hand diverts her healing magic to himself, magic she desperately needs. Root angrily informs Artemis that Holly lost her trigger finger in the door and couldn't properly heal herself because Artemis took her magic. Determined to help, Artemis finds a contraband acorn in Holly's possession and performs the ritual to restore her magic. After placing Holly's severed finger with the acorn in soil beneath the Arctic ice, they watch as blue sparks travel along her arm, erupting in healing magic that restores her finger. When Holly regains consciousness, she tests her newly healed finger by punching Artemis squarely between the eyes, declaring them, "Even now." This moment of physical comedy masks a deeper significance. Holly's willingness to risk her life by plunging into freezing water to save Artemis's father, and Artemis's determination to restore her magic represent a fundamental shift in their relationship from adversaries to allies who make sacrifices for each other. This moral growth continues in their farewell at Tara, where Holly presents Artemis with a gold coin she shot through the center, telling him to keep it to remind you that deep beneath the layers of deviousness, you have a spark of decency. The coin symbolizes both their first meeting, when Artemis tricked her out of her gold, and the potential for goodness that Holly now recognizes in him. In his final session with Dr. Poe, when asked if he's found anyone worthy of his respect, Artemis thinks of his father, Holly, and Butler, then smiles and answers simply, "Yes, I believe I have." This acknowledgement represents significant growth for a boy who previously viewed others merely as tools for his schemes. The Arctic incident concludes with carefully orchestrated plot threads that ripple through the series' future. Artemis Sr.'s placement in Helsinki University Hospital, with his restored eyesight but mind-wiped memories, creates a complex family dynamic that Artemis must navigate. His father remembers nothing of the fairy world or his rescue, leaving Artemis to shoulder these extraordinary secrets alone. Meanwhile, Artemis's return to St. Bartleby's School carries new weight. He views his privileged world through a transformed lens, understanding both human nature and fairy civilization with unprecedented depth. Mulch Diggum's disappearance, with his negotiated head start, exemplifies Colfer's masterful character development. The kleptomaniac dwarf's exit isn't merely an escape, it's a carefully placed chess piece for future narratives. Artemis's immediate contemplation of future collaborations with Mulch reveals his unchanged strategic mind, even as his moral compass shifts. Their unlikely alliance represents the series' signature blend of criminal ingenuity and unexpected loyalty. In Haven City, Foley's decision to remove surveillance from Foul Manor marks a watershed moment in fairy-human relations. This gesture transcends mere operational protocol. It represents the fairy's first trust in a human in centuries. The significance isn't lost on Artemis, who acknowledges this faith with his promise that the people are safe from me. Meanwhile, Opal Cowboy's survival introduces a formidable antagonist whose brilliant madness mirrors Artemis's own genius, but without his emerging conscience. The epilogue masterfully balances Artemis's growth with his fundamental nature. His criminal inclinations haven't vanished, they've evolved. He approaches potential schemes with new consideration for consequences and ethics, yet remains drawn to the intellectual thrill of plotting. This internal conflict between genius and growing conscience creates a rich psychological foundation for future narratives. The novel's transformation of Artemis from antagonist to reluctant hero represents sophisticated character development. His brilliant calculation and moral ambiguity remain intact, but now readers understand the emotional architecture behind his actions, particularly his desperate need to restore his family. His partnership with the fairies he once exploited isn't merely plot convenience, it's a fundamental shift in his worldview that will echo throughout the series. Colfer's expanded fairy world emerges as a character itself. The introduction of biobombs, advanced fairy politics, and complex characters like Opal Cowboy creates a universe where ancient magic seamlessly integrates with cutting-edge technology. This unique blend distinguishes the series from traditional fairy tales, offering a fresh perspective on both genres. The Arctic setting proves metaphorically rich. As the frozen landscape thaws, so does Artemis's isolated heart. His willingness to risk everything for his father reveals the humanity beneath his calculated exterior. The adventure demonstrates that even the most brilliant minds need connection, and true genius lies not in isolation, but in learning to trust and collaborate with others. The Arctic incident represents a crucial turning point in Artemis Fowl's character development. In the first book, he was primarily an antagonist, a brilliant but amoral child kidnapping a fairy for ransom. Here, we see him evolve into something more complex, still calculating and manipulative, but capable of selflessness and cooperation when circumstances demand it. This evolution is driven by vulnerability. For the first time, we see Artemis truly afraid, not for himself, but for his father. This fear humanizes him, revealing the wounded child beneath the criminal mastermind facade. When he receives the video of his father, his reaction is visceral. An electric jolt traveled the length of Artemis's spine. This emotional response contrasts sharply with his usual calculated demeanor. His relationship with Holly Short particularly showcases this growth. Their dynamic evolves from hostility to reluctant respect, culminating in Holly's gift of the gold coin, a symbol of both their first meeting and Artemis's potential for redemption. When Holly punches him after he helps restore her finger, declaring them even now, it marks a new equilibrium between them based on mutual respect rather than exploitation. Butler, too, witnesses this evolution. When Artemis sobs with relief after his father's rescue, Butler allows him this moment of vulnerability before Artemis regains his composure. Their relationship deepens beyond bodyguard and principal to something approaching family, with Butler serving as both protector and moral compass. By the novel's end, Artemis has learned valuable lessons about cooperation, sacrifice, and the consequences of his actions. Yet Colfer wisely avoids a complete transformation. Artemis remains fundamentally himself, still contemplating future schemes, even as he acknowledges newfound respect for others. This balance between growth and consistency makes his character arc believable and compelling. The Arctic incident thus serves as a bridge between Artemis the villain and Artemis the hero, showing us a boy genius caught between his criminal tendencies and his emerging conscience, between childhood and adulthood, between isolation and connection. His journey continues beyond these frozen landscapes, but this Arctic adventure marks the moment when Artemis Fowl begins to thaw.